From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. There are currently about 47 million 18 to 29-year-olds in the United States who are eligible to vote in November's general election. Of that number, 15 million turned 18 since the 2016 election. For Republicans, these numbers spell doom, given that young voters are trending to the left and likely to pick the Liberal Party over the conservative one. According to my guest, David Farris, in his new book, The Kids Are All Left, quote, the basic dynamic ahead of November is a Republican Party increasingly dominated by and aligned with a dying white demographic, and a Democratic Party that is not exactly beloved, but is grudgingly supported come election time by overwhelming majorities of young people who haven't yet voted in numbers sufficient enough to make anyone take notice. David Farris is the author of It's Time to Fight Dirty and Dissent and Revolution in a Digital Age. He's a regular contributor to The Week and an associate professor of political science at Roosevelt University in Chicago. The full title of his newest book is called The Kids Are All Left, How Young Voters Will Unite America. Welcome to the program, David.
Thanks for having me on, Sonali. It's great to be here.
Well, I am hoping that you are right with the thesis of your book. And I was wondering if you could set the stage for how you view older, more conservative Americans as out of touch with America's youth by reading a section from your book, The Kids Are All Left.
Sure. Yeah, I'd be glad to. Thank you. So too many people over the age of 45 seem not to get it. They don't understand why they can't call you hot lips anymore or make jokes about Polish people or imitate foreign accents. And they are outraged at the idea of a woman being the lead in the new James Bond movie. And they think older brothers and dads exist to protect the virtue of young women. And they quietly, or not so quietly, since the election of Trump, believe that the plight of poor folks and minorities is their own fault because they don't work hard enough and that young people are snowflakes who were given participation trophies just for showing up and whose brains were warped in childhood by parents who told them how special they were. And that kids should know that the world is really like and that most of them are not special at all. And they should not be told fairy tales about equality and justice. And they are tired of having their Thanksgiving soliloquies about Ronald Reagan ruined by their sour attitude to their kids' punk social justice warrior girlfriend or boyfriend. And they have nothing against Muslims or Africans. They were nice to one of them just last week. But they think it's all gone too far and that somewhere soon they are going to encounter a transgender Syrian activist in the bathroom. And that is why they voted for Trump. And even though sometimes he should shut up on Twitter and stop whining, everything he is doing is basically fine and overdue. And maybe the kids will understand someday, even if they don't now. It's all for their own good.
And that is David Farris, my guest, reading from his new book, The Kids Are All Left, How Young Voters Will Unite America. So how do we know where young voters' sensibilities lie? I suppose there's always a segment of our younger generation, of any society's younger generation, that is rebellious. But do they really, and that maybe tend toward radical left ideas? But in today's America, do young voters actually tend more liberal than conservative?
They definitely do, yeah. And we actually have a lot of kind of polling and survey data to back that up. You know, you can go to Pew and look at their surveys of 18 to 29-year-old voters. There's a great project called the Harvard Youth Poll that's been asking 18 to 29-year-olds their attitudes about politics and society and economics for decades. And what we see with today's cohort is really clear, right? The 18 to 29-year-olds today are not interested in the right-wing culture war. They believe that climate change is the most serious threat to human civilization. They want the government to be more active in providing public goods for citizens, whether that be healthcare or education or daycare. They have much more sort of liberal attitudes about social issues than their older peers. That shows up in sort of survey after survey and poll after poll, where you see, because of those issue positions, you see these voters gravitating towards Democrats by, you know, 20, 25, sometimes even 30 or 35 points over Republicans.
Let me ask you about what became a big question that I feel has kind of been unanswered during the early primary elections this year. Within the Democratic Party is also a bit of a generational and political divide. And we saw when Senator Bernie Sanders was a strong contender in the very crowded Democratic candidate field that he tended to attract the largest number of young voters. But come election time, at least in those early states, many reports suggested that the young voters who showed up to the political rallies failed to show up to the polls to vote for their favorite candidate. What do you think happened?
Well, I think a lot of things happened. You know, I mean, I would probably bracket this Democratic primary and say, you know, it's tough to draw lessons from it because the way that the COVID-19 crisis sort of descended on us in the middle of that process makes it really kind of difficult to know how it would have played out had that not happened. But
unfortunately, many decisions happened on Super Tuesday, and Super Tuesday took place right at the cusp of, or at the beginning of when that crisis was starting to impact states.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, but even on those Super Tuesday states, right, you see like a really clear divide between Democrats over the age of 45 and Democrats under the age of 45. And the Democratic primary voters who were older preferred Joe Biden over Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren by, you know, double digits, right? Like, for voters under 45, they preferred Sanders or Warren, you know, mostly Sanders, by quite significant margins. So the split that we see nationally where younger folks are much more liberal and more Democratic leaning than their older counterparts, you actually do see that inside the Democratic Party too. If you go into the exit polling for the primaries that did take place, you know, in normal times, if you want to count Super Tuesday as normal times, you see a really stark divide. And really the way that Biden was able to pull this out is just that, you know, the older Democrats tended to turn out in higher numbers. Not that turnout was not up for 18 to 29 year olds, in many places it was, but turnout overall was up so much too that those younger voters just kind of got buried in an avalanche of older Democrats who I think wanted the safety and the certainty of a Biden nomination rather than, I think, what they regarded as rolling the dice with somebody like Senator Sanders.
So let's talk about the current, you know, what's leading up to November's election. Is a large factor in why young voters are tending left based on other demographics such as race and ethnicity and immigration status? I mean, we know that the nation is becoming more diverse, ergo it makes sense that it's younger voters that are going to be more diverse because it's their projected larger numbers that's changing the demographic of the country as a whole. So is the fact that the country is becoming less white directly correlated to why it's becoming less conservative? Or is it that the Republican Party has actively alienated non-white voters and therefore young voters?
Yeah, it's a little column A, a little column B. You know, I mean, there's no question based on, you know, all of the information that we have that the millennials and the Generation Z or the Zoomers are the two most diverse generations in American history, right? So just substantially more people of color in those two generations and substantially fewer white Americans or people who self-identify as white. And in a vacuum, right, in a political system where both Democrats and Republicans were appealing to these more diverse groups in equal numbers or like in a world where Republicans were trying to appeal to these people, you wouldn't see the splits that you see. But because I think the perception mm-hmm. and the reality is that the Republican Party is not interested in winning the votes of younger African-American voters and younger Latinx voters, you see those voters responding accordingly by making different choices, by not expressing any kind of interest in or loyalty to the Republican Party. So that, you know, you have one thing, which is the demographic changes, which are really significant. You have the other thing too, which is that the Republican Party has made this gamble that, you know, the way that they're going to continue to win elections is to appeal to this vanishing white majority and the grievances and the cultural preferences of those older white voters. And that's really just like not working for them at all in terms of winning votes of people under the age of 45.
There is a sense of a more even split if you just look at media coverage. And of course, this is unfortunately part of the sort of corporate media attitude of trying to be balanced. You know, you have the Ben Shapiros of the Richard Spencers, the Milo Yiannopouloses of, and of course, some of those are far extreme right wing of the Republican Party. Maybe even too right-wing for the Republican Party. But is that just because that that a handful of young conservatives are getting an outsized platform on the media?
You know, I mean, I think it's you have a group of, you know, dynamic, young, sort of Trumpy conservatives who are the ones who get invited onto Fox News, and they're the ones that have the big podcast numbers, but they don't necessarily represent the thinking of their generation. You know, if you dig into the Harvard Youth Poll data, younger conservatives, younger Republicans are you know, by 20 points or so, less likely to support President Trump. They're more likely to say that they believe that climate change is real and that it's man-made and that we need to do something about it. They're more likely to express interest in using you know, the tax system and the tax structure to create a more equal society, right? I don't want to take this group and characterize them as liberal, right? Because they're not. But what they are is less sort of stridently conservative as a group than the most sort of like telegenic people that you see on Fox representing young conservatives, right? So there's also a split within the Republican Party where older Republicans and older conservatives have kind of gone off the deep end. And if there's a real risk here that they might, over the coming years, lose some of those young Republicans who, you know, maybe they think that that government should you know, we should have lower taxes and lower corporate taxes, but they also think that, you know, their children are going to die in like a fiery hellscape of climate change, and that you know, that may eventually become a more important issue to them than these other sort of conservative ideological leanings that they have could be sort of eclipsed by the National Republican Party's failure to do anything about these major problems that are kind of barreling towards us.
So climate change is clearly a big issue for young people for obvious reasons. They're incredibly active. We see some very powerful and inspiring movements led by young people on the issue of the climate. What are some of the other issues? I mean, you know, healthcare for the American electorate as a whole is incredibly important. How important is the issue of healthcare for younger voters? Some might, you know, imagine that it's not as important because younger voters tend to think about access to health insurance or healthcare coverage less than older folks, those of us who are more prone to health issues. Also, there's the issue of simply wealth and income inequality, which I imagine affects young people disproportionately considering how difficult it was even before the pandemic for college debt burdened young folks to get decent paying jobs.
Yeah, I mean, so climate change is a huge issue for this group. But also, you know, healthcare, it kind of depends on the slice of the electorate you're looking at. You know, I think it's probably less important to your, you know, 18 to 24 year old voters than it is to folks who get out into the working world and discover that when they change jobs, they lose their insurance. They have to go through this whole process. It's nonsense. Even the insurance that they do have doesn't cover them the way that they, I think, might expect before they have to encounter that system for real. And then, you know, issues of racial justice and systemic racism. You know, it might seem obvious to say, but when you have an extremely diverse generation where you know, white Americans are a minority of Generation Z, you know, those folks are going to be particularly attuned to what's happening nationally with things like the George Floyd protests, with things like what's happening in Portland, and sort of like the perception that law enforcement and is out of control, right? And is sort of populated by people who regard ordinary American citizens as the enemy. And I think that's another thing, sort of pushing people to the left. In addition to college, and it's, you know, it's important to note that probably even half of Generation Z, maybe even more than half Generation Z, is not going to go to college, and that, you know, that might not be their top concern. Wow. But for the half of the generation that will go to college, I think that they increasingly see the system that we have in place as kind of ridiculous. You know, like why do I have to take out six-figure loans to get an education that's available to people at almost no cost in our peer countries? So there's this perception, I think, among particularly Generation Z and also millennials, that the economic system in the United States and the systemic racism in the United States is disadvantaging them. It's a huge problem, and it's a huge problem that older Americans just seem uninterested in working on. And I think those are things in particular that are driving them towards politicians like Senator Sanders and Senator Warren, who have a sharper critique of the problems in our society.
The age of those senators doesn't seem to be a detriment to young voters. It's their policies that attract them, which is certainly heartening. There's so much talk and has been so much talk since 2016 in particular about the political polarization in the United States. Yet your book's subtitle is How Young Voters Will Unite America. How do you see them as a panacea, or at least, you know, working away from polarization toward unity?
Sure, that's a great question. You know, there's really two things going on in American politics at the same time right now. One of them is polarization, right, which is a measure of how far apart we are, you know, in terms of our ideas. The parties are, by many measures, as far apart on basic ideological measures as they have been since the Civil War, right? And that's a big deal. Has a really important and sometimes destructive effect on our politics. The other thing is that we're closely divided. You know, so you have these very, very different parties that for most of my adult lifetime have seemed like 50-50, you know, like this is a country where you have like a small shift in some small subset of voters, and it can flip elections from Democrats to Republicans, and power just goes back and forth over and over again, and nothing gets done, right? So you have the polarization, you have the close division. What younger voters are on the precipice of doing is they are going to upend that closely divided variable in American politics, because it's not just today's young people, right? It's not just today's 18 to 29 year olds. In fact, the 18 to 29 year old cohort has been voting, you know, by double digits more Democratic than the electorate as a whole since 2004. And so, you know, that many of the voters who voted for John Kerry in 2004 by pretty sharp margins when they were 18 to 24 are now approaching middle age, and they're not changing. You know, they are the same sort of steadfast Democrats that they were 15, 16 years ago.
Which is interesting, because in the past, there's been this sense that, at least among political pundits, that one tends to get more conservative as one gets older.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think that's a really common piece of folk wisdom that's, you know, widely shared and widely believed and widely held, but that there's not a ton of data to back up the idea that large numbers of people become more conservative as they get older. Of course, you know, in a country of 330 million people, you probably know someone, I probably know someone who has gone through one of those political transformations. You know, if you're a liberal, somebody in your family who moves from being a liberal to a conservative is probably going to be the topic of conversation at all your holiday gatherings, you know. but the reality is we have decades of data about the sort of the partisan leanings of individuals and the partisan leanings of generations, and they don't actually tend to change that much. And the social scientists who have dug into this data find, in fact, your partisanship hardens as you get older. And so there are a limited number of opportunities when you are a young person to have like your mind blown, and you're like, oh my God, I'm seeing the world in a new way, right? Like I never realized any of this. When you're in your 30s, it's really just like you get divorced or you move to a new part of the country, and surround yourself with really, really different people. If you don't do that, statistically, you're actually like highly unlikely to move from being a Democrat to a Republican. And those who do, of course, there are people who do that. Those people are offset by people who move from being Republican to Democrat. You know, it's a two-way street. And I think that people becoming more conservative as they age gets more attention than those who become more liberal. But again, the social science data that we have suggests that honestly, it's a very, very small number of people who make these big changes, and it's not enough to flip a whole generation.
Well, let me ask you this, David. How strongly is the Republican Party, and this may not be something you cover in your book necessarily, but how strongly is the Republican Party working to suppress the youth vote between now and November? Because they probably know or have a sense of what you've written about. We have a president who is railing against mail-in voting, but you know, it's not clear if young voters, even if there was a traditional voting set up without a pandemic, if they would have showed up to the polls or not. What do you think is going to happen between now and November in terms of translating this huge cohort of young liberal-leaning voters into showing up to the polls and or mailing in their ballots in time to have their voices be counted?
Sure. I mean, that's always a struggle, right? And if there's one sort of iron law of voting in this country, it's that the youngest voters tend to turn out at lower rates than their older counterparts. Republicans have really taken a lot of delight in making it harder for college students to vote in the state that they're going to school in. And so, you know, you had this big battle in New Hampshire where the governor tried to make it impossible for college students who were attending university in New Hampshire to vote in New Hampshire. They wanted, you know, they wanted them to go back to their home states and vote there. And that effort was actually crushed in the courts. So it was a big victory for voting rights. But I think that you see it, where you have Republican governors and where you have Republican legislatures, they will do everything that they can to make it harder for college students in particular to vote, because they know that there's also a big education gap in our politics right now. And the harder they can make it for college students to vote, you know, the more they're going to drive that turnout down. I think the other way that they intend to kind of drive down turnout with the youngest voters is to make them cynical about Joe Biden. That is to put out as much information as they can that appeals to the sense of younger voters that the whole system is like corrupt and just kind of like, we need to burn it down. It doesn't matter. Biden, Trump, who cares?
Wow.
Right. Like, so I would expect, you know, the Hunter Biden stuff is something that the Trump campaign is going to sell to younger voters and say like, see, right, like here's just like another guy that gives his kid a job and his kid gets rich off his political fame, right? So who, you know, you might as well just vote for Trump, right?
Or not show up to vote.
Or not show up or to
vote
third
party,
Trump,
I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think one problem they're going to have this year is that there's not really a credible, you know, like Green Party or Libertarian Party candidate, or at least not a well-known candidate on either one of those tickets. And that is going to make it harder for them to convince some subset of the 18 to 29 year old vote to kind of spoil their ballot by voting third party.
Well, David, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck with your book. And as I said at the outset of the interview, I really hope that you are right on the money on this. I think our planet absolutely and country absolutely needs for young voters to be where you say they are. Thanks so much and good luck to you.
Thanks for having me on the show, Sonali. Appreciate it.
My guest has been David Farris. He's the author of It's Time to Fight Dirty and Dissent and Revolution in a Digital Age, a regular contributor to The Week and an associate professor of political science at Roosevelt University in Chicago. We've been talking about his latest book. It's called The Kids Are All Left, How Young Voters Will Unite America. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.